Maybe you're one of those kids who wished for a superpower or two, the ability to fly through the sky or to use your heat vision to make your ice cream a little softer. Or maybe something more mundane, like to make your nose light up like Rudolph so you could read comics under the bed covers without having to handle a flashlight. Did I mention comics? They were part of the childhood of many an American kid and remain in their lives and imaginations now well into adulthood. I mean, witness the huge audiences that go to movie theaters to see movies about comic characters. Comics will be celebrated at the Ashland Literary Arts Festival on Saturday, and two of the celebrators join us now. Mike Madrid writes books about comic characters. His latest is called, would you hand that over to me, Supergirls. The subtitle is Fashion, Feminism, Fantasy, and the History of Comic Book Heroines. Mike Madrid, thanks for joining us by phone.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you here. Laura Kimberly is with us as well. She is the director of the Medford Branch Library and the founder of Medford Comic Con, which will return for its fourth and longer iteration next April. Laura, good to have you in the studio with me.
Thank you for having me here.
So let's get from each of you first the beginning of your fascination with comic books. Let's talk about yours, Laura, first.
I was a reluctant reader as a child.
Really?
And I remember picking up Archie comics as a kid and falling in love with them, and Garfield, the old Garfield comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just grown from there.
Were you ever much of a superhero comic lover? Did you evolve into one over time?
I liked Wonder Woman when I was a little girl.
Mm-hmm. And how many times have you seen the movie?
Way too many to count. I have a little girl who's 8, and she looks up to her. She likes the strong female character.
Wow. Okay, so that's right in the wheelhouse of Mike Madrid. Mike, tell us about the beginning of your fascination with comic books and characters.
Well, I was a big reader when I was a kid, and my parents always took me to the library and really encouraged me to read. And luckily, they were not the types who looked down on comics. So they there was a good balance. I would get books from the library, but they also encouraged me to read comics. So I was at superhero comics around when I was a kid, and I really I developed a fascination for them. But then I also would like to sneak a look at my older sister, and I like to look at her Betty and Veronica comics, because they kind of gave me what I thought was, anyway, sort of a look into the mysterious world of teenage girls, you know. And I thought, I read those Betty Veronica comics and kind of as a sort of a preview of what teenage life was going to be like.
Did Betty and Veronica help you relate to teenage girls at all?
Not really, but they helped me to learn how to draw teenage girls.
Ah, excellent. So explain this then. So do you actually make comics yourself in addition to write about comics?
I do not. When I was younger, I was interested in getting into the comic book business, but I went into advertising instead. But I always had a fascination with comics and kind of what they say about our society. And a lot of what I write about is kind of how the comics have changed over 7 decades and how they've reflected changing views on, specifically on women in America.
Well, yeah, and that is very clear in the book as you walk us through the decades, and it's pretty interesting to look at the physical depictions of women. Those have changed greatly over time, it seems.
Yes, and it seems like it also in terms of the characters themselves, a lot of the male characters like Superman and Batman, for the most part, have stayed pretty consistent. I mean, everyone kind of knows who they are. And there have been little changes over the years to kind of keep them current. But a lot of the publishers really take greater liberties with the female characters. Part of it is because they don't sell as well. So they feel like there's not as big a financial risk by changing someone's story drastically. And I think also another reason is a lot of the writers in the past have been a lot of male writers, really didn't quite understand these characters, so they didn't really know how to depict them or tell their stories. And I think we're getting a little bit where there's a little change in that now with different types of writers coming into the industry.
Laura Kimberly, I mean, were there ever any things said to you? It sounds like both of you had fairly supportive parents, and whatever you wanted to read was fine with them. But did anybody ever do the whole, come on, comics are for kids thing with you?
Yes, especially when I was a school librarian. I would get that all the time from some of the teachers, and I'd bring out the research and the statistics about why graphic novels and comics are good for kids to read. And then I tell my story about how I hated to read when I was a little kid, and my parents let me read whatever I wanted to, and I picked up comics, and I love to read.
So you have a first-person story as well as the statistics to point out. It's like, hey, look, comic books really helped get me interested in reading.
They did.
When you talk about women heroes, as we were just talking about with Mike Madrid, the stuff he tends to write about, you mentioned that Wonder Woman appeals to you. Were there any other female characters that caught your attention over the years?
She-Ra. Uh-huh. I dressed up as She-Ra this last year for our Comic-Con, dyed my hair blonde. Uh-huh. The relationship with her brother is a little weird, but... strong female character. I think that's a good role model for girls, especially with what's going on in the world. We need enough strong female role models.
Well, and what Mike was just saying too about what sells for comics, that, you know, it was often the assumption that it was mostly young male readers, but it seems like it doesn't take more than a picture or two from something like Medford Comic Con. Just looking and perusing the pictures you have on Facebook from last year, a lot of women and girls come out for the Comic Con.
Yes, we had a huge female following this year, which was wonderful. I think we actually had more female contestants in our costume contests.
So how many people, give us a little walkthrough of Medford Comic Con and how it's grown over the first 3 years.
So we started Medford Comic Con in the summer of 2015 in conjunction with our summer reading program. Every story has a hero. And we got the idea from the Klamath Falls Library and decided to plan this Comic Con with 4.5 months. And we had it on a Friday in July, and we ended up having over 2,000 people that showed up. And we had so much fun that we decided that we were going to do it again. And the second year, we moved it to the last Saturday in April, and we changed our theme again, because every year we usually change the theme. And we had over 5,000 people come.
Let me pause you there, because I do want to hear about year three, because this has been the big one, and the numbers are fairly staggering. We'll come back and talk about those numbers. On our way to the break, I'll remind you about the other numbers floating in the air right now, which are the numbers from our fall fund drive. We're not quite to $100,000 yet, seeking $200,000 by the time the drive is over. You can call 888-552-6191 or contact us online at ijpr.org to make a pledge. Back on the exchange in 1 minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about some of the most important works of American literature in this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. And yes, I do mean comic books. Comic books are the subject matter on the table for a couple of reasons, part of which is they'll be featured at this weekend's Ashland Literary Arts Festival coming up on Saturday at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. Two of the people who'll be attending and dealing with comic books in a couple of different ways are with us in this hour. Mike Madrid writes books about comic characters, as latest as The Supergirls, Fashion, Feminism, Fantasy, and The History of Comic Book Heroines. Those follow two previous books about, well, actually, one of them is called Vixens, Vamps, and Vipers. The other one's called Divas, Dames, and Daredevils. Are you noticing a theme here? That's Mike Madrid's work. Laura Kimberly is with us as well. She is the manager at the Medford Branch Library and the organizer of Medford Comic Con. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Many stories to share about comic books and your favorite characters and maybe the superpower you wished you had when you were younger. We'd love to hear those stories at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So the big buildup was to talk about year three, the most recent year of the Medford Comic Con, with Laura Kimberly. How did that one go?
So this last year, we had 12,000 people come to the 2017 Medford Comic Con. We expanded into the streets around the Medford Library and took over RCC and SOU's HEC building, the bottom floor. We're in some of the other buildings this year as well. And we added more vendors. We had over 60 vendors this year, over 30 workshops. We had more celebrities. We had movie replica cars. We had two costume contests, one for children and families, and then one for teens and adults. And then we even had a Comic-Con cosplay wedding.
Really?
Really.
A real wedding?
A real wedding. Somebody got married in our garden area.
And what were they dressed as?
As Firefly characters.
Uh-huh. That's a lot of 12,000 people is an amazing number. Mm-hmm. How did you fit them all?
With a lot of planning, luckily not everybody was in one area of the building. They were out in the streets. Some of them didn't even come in the building. They were just out in the streets just because there's a lot going on out there. We had food trucks. We had 9 food trucks. All of the food trucks ran out of food this year. A lot of our vendors sold out of the items that they were selling. The storefronts down there also ran out of food. It was wonderful. There's people all over the bottom floor of the HEC building, throughout the library, Medford Library, because we had every corner taken over with something going on.
Mike Madrid, I have to ask, given that you write about comics as you do, are you a regular attendee of Comic-Cons, comic conventions?
I am. This past summer I went to Comic-Con in San Diego, and it was pretty amazing. It was a little overwhelming, but it was pretty amazing. And one of the things that's always really interesting is seeing what characters people are really interested in, and interested in enough to dress up as them. There's so much in the comics now. It feels like with the movies and everything, it seems like it's lost its heart a little. It's such big business, but it's a lot of those people that are just these really fervent fans that still remind you of how much people really love these characters enough to dress up as them. And they really, they're the ones that are kind of keeping this interest alive. And it's also great to see kids who are still reading comics, because oftentimes you go to the comic store, it seems like it's just old guys like me that are still buying stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it's great seeing kids, and like Laura was saying, families. I'd see whole families dressed up as characters together. And it's interesting now that you've got whole families that are sharing this interest.
You talk about keeping the interest alive. I mean, it seems like DC Comics in particular, and yes, I know this because I go to a comic book store myself, but DC in particular seems to be rebooting its characters about every 2 or 3 years now.
Right.
So is there a real struggle for financial success in the comic book world and the printed page?
There's always a debate as to whether the comics are still just being printed now, published now, just to keep the trademarks active on these characters, because the big money is made on the movies and all the licensing and stuff like that. You'd think that with the movies being so popular that there would be sort of a spillover with people being more interested in the comics, but it doesn't seem to really be happening anymore. I don't know if it's just a matter of people not reading as much or what, or not wanting to commit to sort of a regular monthly title that they're buying, but there does feel like oftentimes you feel like new comics, there is this desperation to keep interest in the medium.
Well, it seemed like DC, for example, changed Superman drastically about 20 years ago and took away most of his powers, and then ended up going whoops after a few months and putting him back into the flying, the strength, the X-ray vision, everything.
Yeah, they really. I mean, for some people who have been reading comics for several years, they really do expect you to overlook a lot of things because they change some of these characters so drastically, and then you're told, "Oh, well, that didn't really happen. Now this is the way it really is." So it gets kind of exhausting after a while. All these reboots, and Marvel's kind of the same as well.
So let's bring this back around to women characters in the comics. I mean, are they still a minority, vastly, Mike?
No, in the last few years, we've seen there's finally, on the part of the publishers, there's finally been this change in perception that women don't read comics. Women fans have been a lot more vocal about their interest in these characters, and it seems like the publishers have been making an attempt to feature more of these characters in their own titles. It's funny, when I first wrote my first book, and I would talk to people about it, they'd say, well, there aren't any women characters in comics. There's Wonder Woman and maybe Catwoman and Supergirl. And there are hundreds of other characters. They just don't get as much exposure as women.
Supergirl's certainly been rebooted several times. I wonder how that strikes you, Laura Kimberly, as a person trying to encourage other young women and young boys as well to read, and what you see in terms of what's available out there and the kinds of characters that they can relate to.
It's vast. It's vast, which is great, but it's kind of hard when they reboot every time with these characters and they want you to forget certain elements. I think of Spider-Man in particular and how they keep rebooting Spider-Man, and you're supposed to forget these certain storylines that have happened along the way.
Relationships and deaths and births.
It's really hard to get a grasp on.
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is, my hope is that they won't do that too much with the female characters too, just because girls need something to hold on to. I know I do, and want to be able to look up to that character. And it's kind of hard to keep track of the storyline when it keeps changing over and over and over again.
Mike Madrid writes books about comics heroes. His latest is called The Supergirls. Laura Kimberly is the director of the Medford Branch Library and the organizer of the Medford Comic Con, which will be a two-day festival next April. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Let's talk about your comic book characters and your favorites from childhood and things you like and dislike about the way they changed over time. And we can spend some time particularly about the characterizations of women in comic book pages. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So is there a number two for you? I mean, Mike mentioned Supergirl, so there's an obvious one. But, I mean, so 2, 3, 4. Who else down the line behind Wonder Woman do you think appeals to women comic book readers in particular?
Supergirl, Catwoman. I think they're Catwoman, she's that has a lot of interest with women. We had multiple women this last year who dressed up as Catwoman. Harley Quinn. We saw a lot of Harley Quinns.
Who's a Joker side?
Poison Ivy is another strong character. We saw a couple women who were dressed up as Poison Ivy this last year.
So there's actually three villains you just
mentioned. Yeah, a lot of the villains.
Catwoman is sort of on the line here, but
it is. Supergirl was a big one, and Wonder Woman was a big one this last year. She-Ra. I wanted to bring back the 80s with She-Ra. Uh-huh.
This is like He-Man's partner, She-Ra? Yeah.
Yeah, they have such a weird relationship.
Okay, you mentioned that twice now. Can you explain what do you know of the relationship?
Well, you think they're supposed to be brother and sister, but they act like more like boyfriend and girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
And we were watching the comics, like old cartoons before this last year's Comic-Con, because my son wanted to be He-Man.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, no, not going to
because you were going as She-Ra.
Yeah, after watching the comics, I was like, nope, we're not doing that. That's kind of weird.
So, Mike Madrid, let's go into what Laura was just talking about, though, that the kinds of characters that appeal to women as women characters, there's a fair number of non-heroes in there. I mean, Catwoman, again, is sort of like an on-the-line character. She's got some good motivations and reasons for being what she's doing, but she's named Catwoman primarily because she dresses like a cat and is a burglar. And a master thief. So what do you make of the fact that there are so many super villains or at least costumed villains who are women?
If you look back at the last 70 years of comics or so, oftentimes the villainesses are the only ones that actually had a certain sense of autonomy and kind of controlled their own destinies. A lot of the heroines were so bound to like protecting their identity or keeping a guy happy or something like that. And the women, the bad women had a lot more freedom and always seemed to be enjoying themselves a little more. And I think that's why there's a certain fascination with them. They seem like they're more independent and they control their own destiny. I think that's why over the years, so many of the villainesses like Catwoman have gotten to be popular that they wind up kind of reforming them so that they become sort of anti-heroines. But as we've seen, oftentimes that kind of, when they become good, it kind of takes away that spirit in the character that everyone was drawn to in the first place.
And that sounds like a bit of a problem for male characters in the comic books as well, too. I mean, Superman is just so gosh darn good from Kansas and everything as he's been portrayed since the 80s that it's kind of hard to find a dark point in there that makes him a bit more three-dimensional.
Yeah, it's interesting that people feel like there needs to be that darkness to make him real. I mean, I kind of like the fact that he's so good and he's such a nice guy. It's like, I wish there were more people like that in the world, you know, especially with that much power. I think as audiences have gotten more cynical, they've been drawn to a character like Batman that's more kind of morally questionable in the sense that...
And a bit more screwed up, frankly. I mean, this is a guy who you probably wouldn't have a career if his parents were alive.
Exactly. So you've got a lot of those characters like Wolverine and over on Marvel, Deadpool. A lot of these characters that are more morally ambiguous have gotten popular in modern times because they aren't so good. So it's I think that's been a big problem for someone like Wonder Woman. I think that a lot of readers in the last 30 years or so kind of feel like she's too good and kind of too morally preachy, and that doesn't appeal to them.
So does the Wonder Woman we saw on screen in this year's movie, for example, quite the butt kicker in so many different ways, a fierce fighter, is she amped up a bit over the comic book version that is currently extant?
Not really. I think they actually toned her down because in the last couple of years in the comics, they've actually made her quite kind of bloodthirsty and like a real sort of battle crazed. I think that we got a pretty good version in the movie that was a good balance between the modern version and then the sort of some of the lessons and values that were in the old comics from the 1940s.
So I have to ask Laura Kimberly, do you actually carry comic books in the library in Medford?
We do. Mm-hmm. We have them for adults, teens, and children.
So, and how do you keep the kids from getting into the adult versions? Because comic books have gotten, the Comics Code Authority we can talk about with Mike in a moment, but long gone. So you can put pretty much anything in comic books now.
You can. We have them separated, though. So our adult section for comics is upstairs in the nonfiction, and then they have comics in the children's area, and we have that pinpointed for kids when they come in, and then we have them up in the teen department in their own little department area. A lot of times kids are with their parents, so their parents are going to dictate if that's something that they can read or not read.
So as a librarian and as a parent, I just wonder how you work kids into helping them understand some of the characters that may have some moral ambiguities or dark stripes, like the fact that, you know, those of us who remember Batman on TV, the Batman 66 version that was so squeaky clean and holy cow Batman and all the stuff that Robin would say, very different kind of Batman. For many years since that time, very much a darker character. So how, as librarian and parent, help work kids into understanding the darker sides of these characters?
Well, we, like with my own kids, I usually end up reading the comics with them. It's a good time for us to sit down and kind of relax from the day. And the last questions, and I'll ask them questions as we're going along, and it's a learning lesson, and I'll ask them, is that something that you would do? Why is that?
Mm-hmm. Why do you think Bruce Wayne did this?
Why do you think Bruce Wayne did this? Or is it okay to fight? No. Are you going to do what Batman did in this case? No. Why is that? Because it's not you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm. But that's interesting, too, that, I mean, making the case for to a kid, it's like, well, yes, this guy is a hero because he does these things, but these are things that we shouldn't be doing. Don't emulate the hero, I guess, is what we're saying.
Well, my kids are Cub Scout. My son's a Cub Scout. My daughter's a Girl Scout, so I can pull that into that. Would a Girl Scout do that? Mm-hmm. Would a Boy Scout do that? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, no, that's...
Well, I mean, so then we talk about the heroes who are more like Boy Scouts, like Superman, for example. Do those appeal to your kids, for example?
My son, yes, because he's definitely the firstborn, the role follower.
Right.
My daughter would like more, I think, of the female characters that are kind of on the naughty side, because she likes to get into mischief.
Uh-huh. Like who? I mean, like Harley Quinn?
Harley Quinn, yeah. Mm-hmm. She loves Harley Quinn. That's who she wants to be for Halloween.
Let's talk about Harley Quinn, because this is a character who is often at the Joker's side, and I caught myself using the term sidekick a minute ago, Mike Madrid, and often women throughout comics history have been the sidekicks of the guy heroes, haven't they?
They have. With a lot of times in the over comics history, we've seen sort of a female version of a hero, like Hawkman had Hawkgirl. They were always kind of the helper. They never were the stars in their own right. They never headlined the comics, and they just kind of went along with the guys. They helped them out. Oftentimes they'd get captured and they'd get tied up and the guy would have to rescue them. So I remember when I was a kid, a lot of the other guys would always think those characters were stupid because the perception was they were kind of useless. But for decades, a lot of women in the comics were the sidekicks, which is, it's interesting because you also had a lot of kids that were sidekicks, so you're basically saying that an adult woman has about the same value as a 12-year-old boy.
Oh, that's true. If you put Robin next to Batman as sidekick and Toro next to the original Human Torch.
Yeah.
So a woman aside, a man is basically equivalent to the 12-year-old boy.
Yeah. So it's kind of a weird... a lot of what I look at is sort of when... You know, what messages were kids getting when they were reading these comics, especially about the relationships between men and women? Because, you know, when you're a kid, you're getting a lot of your information from these sources. And there's a lot of weird messages that kids, especially boys, were getting about male-female relationships and marriage and loss of freedom and all that kinds of stuff. And it's all tied in with the sort of the secret identity with superheroes and everything.
All right, much more to talk about particularly about the women in comics, with Mike Madrid, the author of The Supergirls, Fashion, Feminism, Fantasy, and the History of Comic Book Heroines. He'll be at Ash Literary Arts Festival on Saturday. So will Laura Kimberly. She is the Medford Library Branch Director and the creator of Medford Comic Con, 12,000 people last year, and a bigger two-day version coming next April. We have more to talk about with them on the way to the break. I'll remind you that this is fall funded drive time here on JPR, seeking $200,000 in pledges overall, just a bit shy of $100,000 at this point, so a lot of ground to cover today and tomorrow. How do we get there? One pledge at a time. Your pledge, $45. Do you have it for a new membership? Can you handle 20? Whatever works within your means. You're listening to public radio, so you clearly attach a value to it. Can you attach some dollars to that value? We would love a pledge from you at 888-552-6191, or pledge online, handle the machinery yourself, at ijpr.org or through the JPR app. We'll be back on the Jefferson Exchange to talk more about comic books with our guests in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you so much for listening. We're talking about comic books today on the Jefferson Exchange. We're leaving the hardcover books behind for just a day to talk about some of the characters that we grew up with and continue to feel some allegiance to. I mean, look at all the comic book character movies that are out there in the world today. From, let's see, Thor Ragnarok is out there now. We had Wonder Woman over the past summer. There's a movie now about the creator of Wonder Woman and his two wives, in essence. It was a love triangle. Interesting stuff we'll talk about with our guests here. Mike Madrid writes books about comics characters. His latest is called The Supergirls, Fashion, Feminism, Fantasy, and the History of Comic Book Heroines. He'll be at Ashland Literary Arts Festival on Saturday. So will Laura Kimberly, who is the director of the Medford Branch Library and the founder of Medford Comic Con, which drew 12,000 people to downtown Medford April of this year and will become a two-day event April of next year. You can join us on the exchange with your stories, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to go in through a little brief history here, Mike Madrid, of women in comic books, as we talked sort of obliquely about women as sidekicks and things like that. I mean, there have been for many years now independent women comic characters pretty much since the beginning. I mean, Wonder Woman only came 2 years after Batman and 3 years after Superman, right?
Correct. She first debuted in 1941, right around the same time as the attack on Pearl Harbor. But there had been, actually, the first female character in comics was Sheena, the Queen of the Jungle, and she appeared in a British comics a couple of months before Superman, but here in America she appeared first appeared in 1938, same year as Superman. And there really have been, especially in the early 40s, before the end of the war, there were a number of female characters in comics, and some of them had quite long, successful characters. But in the 50s, there was pressure to portray women in more traditional roles as opposed to heroic roles. So a lot of those characters disappeared in the mid-50s.
Let's talk about the mid-50s in just a moment, because we have the whole Comics Code Authority thing and the Seduction of the Innocent and all that, which brings us to the earlier time. And I found myself surprised, among other things, in your book, The Supergirls, that Phantom Lady, whose costume looked mighty racy in the 80s, it was about that racy in the 40s, too, wasn't it?
It was, you know, but the kind of the default costume for female characters from the very beginning of comics was a swimsuit, in the same way that for men it was that leotard and a cape that Superman first debuted in. Sheena had a sort of a skimpy swimsuit, and that seemed to be kind of the basis for all heroines that followed her.
So do we have to assume that that there were no female superheroines in cold weather cities? There was no Phantom Lady in Green Bay, for example, although her colors would match the team.
That was the case, and they all could also operate very well in high heels. There was one character from the late 40s named the Blonde Phantom who would put on an evening gown and a mask and go out fighting crime, and there's scenes of her on building ledges or diving off of piers in her evening gown, and she never seems to have a problem with that long dress. It's very interesting.
So they have to dress a certain way, but, you know, this is also, we're talking about women in the comics appearing at a time when not a lot of women worked. So what was the usual situation of a secret identity if they had one?
Well, a lot of them were, in the early comics, there were a lot of wealthy guys like Bruce Wayne who could afford to have this secret life as a crime fighter. And you had a lot of debutantes who also were doing the same thing. So they were daughters of rich families who would put on a costume at night and go out and fight crime, and then no one ever knew about it. But then there also were a lot of secretaries in the early comics. And they would have to hide what they were doing from their bosses.
And there was also Phantom Lady herself was a bit of a debutante, wasn't she? In fact, you have a whole class of characters you refer to in the book as debutantes.
Right. There were a lot of debutantes who were, and they had to maintain this idea that they were, you know, they weren't that interesting. They just went out in their daytime activities. They just go out to parties and go shopping for new clothes and things like that. And no one ever suspected that they actually were more interesting and they kind of got to be themselves when they would put on a mask and costume and go out at night and be daring.
Now, I notice of Phantom Lady, actually the bit of an exception here, because, I mean, there are names like Spider Widow and Miss Fury, some characters I see in your book for the first time ever, but a lot of girl after name. In fact, Supergirl is in the TV show version now, is probably about 23, 24 years old, but she's still called Supergirl.
A lot of girls, very few women, even fewer ladies, but there are a lot of girls. And, yeah, and that's been pretty much a mainstay for the comic industry. And they're not teenagers; they're adults, but they're still considered girls. Which kind of Spider-Man, when he first appeared, he was like 15 or 16, but he was Spider-Man.
Right.
He wasn't Spider-Boy. But a woman of a comparable age was a girl, and until she was in her 20s, like Invisible Girl in the Fantastic Four, she had a baby, and she was still Invisible Girl.
So Laura Kimberly, as a librarian and a woman and who explains reading material to young readers all the time, I mean, what kinds of discussions have you gotten into with young readers about how to explain, well, you know, yes, it's natural for this comics character to wear less clothing because she's a woman, how do you explain circumstances like that?
It's really hard to explain to little kids, especially girls, because they want to know why is it not super woman
or <Right. laughs>
everything's girl.
Why doesn't Wonder Woman get cold?
Yes, and why does she not wear more clothes? And just have to kind of explain the background behind comics and how women have been depicted since comics pretty much started. We wear swimsuits.
Ah, right. Is it getting any better with time? I did notice a recent version of Phantom Lady in Mike's book where Phantom Lady seems to actually have full coverage from neck to toes.
Yes, which is nice. It's nice to see women, female characters have more clothes on and not sexualized, I guess, so much for the way that they look.
Mm-hmm. So we were going to talk about the Comics Code Authority, which arose in the 50s, I believe, Mike Madrid. I have seen the book by Frederick Wortham, The Seduction of the Innocent, which made some rather broad and bold claims about the comics industry, what it was trying to do.
Yes, Wortham was a psychologist, and he really was he hated comics. So in 1954, he published this book called Seduction of the Innocent that was based on his findings, and I'm saying findings in quotes, about that he had spoken to a lot of these children and gotten their perception of sort of what they were learning from comics. And his takeaway was that comics were terrible. They were leading children to down this road to juvenile delinquency, and that they needed to be eradicated. So there was already this growing criticism amongst public educators and parents about comics. So this just was sort of like the icing on the cake. So as a result, the comics industry enacted the Comics Code, which is a set of rules that publishers had to abide by. And there was actually a seal on the comic that said comics, that it was approved by the Comics Code. And that would assure parents that their kids were reading wholesome material. So that really put the damper on a lot of female characters. On the one hand, it made artists draw female bodies more realistically and not have the costumes be so racy. But the flip side of that is they also really toned down the characters. So they became a lot less interesting. More interested in getting married. You see Wonder Woman's adventures during those times. She's really more interested in keeping her boyfriend Steve happy than eradicating evil. So those were a lot of the comics that I grew up with when I was a kid. And the women were really oftentimes depicted as just being someone's girlfriend and a lot weaker than the men.
And the CCA came undone, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, it kind of, you know, over the years, it started losing power. By the 70s, it was still used on the covers, but if you look at those comics in the 70s, a lot of the women were much more sexualized. And during the era of women's liberation, a lot of the characters got to be much stronger. So it became just sort of a thing that was on the covers, but it didn't really have a lot of power anymore.
We're almost out of time, and I want to talk to both of you about the events coming up at the Ashland Literary Arts Festival this weekend. And so, Laura Kimberly, you're here in the Rogue Valley. Tell us about some of the events you have planned.
We're going to have a cosplay karaoke competition where you can dress up as a different character, and you can sing karaoke.
Does it help the competition if your song relates to your character in some way?
Yes. I think that would probably add a little bit.
Like Wonder Woman saying, I will survive.
I will survive. Or seeing... I'm trying to think of other ones. Free Falling. Uh-huh. Think about Free Falling. One of the characters singing Free Falling, Tom Petty.
Oh,
get
great,
extra
yeah.
points for that.
Homage to Tom Petty, sure. Okay. We're giving some hints here on how you can win the karaoke cosplay costume. When is that on Saturday?
It's on, I think it's at 3 o'clock?
I think 3 o'clock is the cosplay con. I think the karaoke is right before that.
It's right before that, isn't it? I think 1:30, 1:30?
I think so. And then, yeah, I think it's 1:33, and then the cosplay is at 3. The cosplay costume contest is 3.
We're going to have a Wonder Woman costume contest, too.
Okay, so Wonder Woman costume contest, the cosplay karaoke, and general cosplay without the karaoke as well.
And keep in mind, when we say Wonder Woman cosplay, that's open to interpretation. However, that doesn't mean that, for example, guys can't come.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean that, I've said I would love if someone brought a dog dressed as Wonder Woman. I know you can't bring dogs in the library, but I understand that there's a window that we could...
Todd Davies mentioned that when she was here a couple of days ago, that yes, we could have the dogs dressed up as Wonder Woman seen through the window, not in the library.
So we're open to interpretation for your idea, your concept of Wonder Woman. Anything goes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All kinds of fun stuff coming up. There's the Ashland Literary Arts Festival on Saturday at the Hannon Library at the Southern Oregon University campus. Most of the events between 10 and 4. Mike Madrid writes books about comics, particularly about comics heroines. And he'll be there, as will Laura Kimberly, who is the director of the Medford Branch Library and the creator of Medford Comic Con. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. See you Saturday.
Thank you for having us.